Water makes up about 90% of growing plants, and thus truly is the lifeblood of agriculture. A government agency that oversees the water for California's Pajaro and Salinas Valleys is drafting new rules for the quality of water. The implementation, or the pending implementation, of these new water quality rules leads us to ask, can agriculture survive clean water?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 733rd edition of the Food Chain Radio program right here on News Talk Radio. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends way over there in Nandi who are tuned in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Hitting What Radio, with engineer Dave Michaels on the boards. Hello, Dave.
Glad to be here.
Got a studio audience today. Sharon Richardson is in from Billings, Montana. Say hello, Sharon.
Hello.
There you go. Folks, water is the lifeblood of agriculture. Water carries essential nutrients to plants and provides the turgor that allows plants to stand up to their environment. Where there is water, there is agriculture, and where there is agriculture, there are people. But people are not the only beings inhabiting the environment. Many other creatures rely on water as well, and therein we find a problem. You see, to encourage our plants to grow and produce beyond what nature would otherwise allow, we must provide them with additional nutrients. The more intensively we farm, the more nutrients we must provide. In California's Salinas and Pajaro Valleys, we farm very intensively, and thus must supplement our farms with a lot of nutrients. Water is the means by which we provide nutrients to our growing crops. Some of this water runs off our farms, carrying our supplemental nutrients out into the environment, where they become a problem for all of us. To protect the environment, California's Central Coast Regional Water Quality Board has proposed new water quality rules that will, in effect, allow the government to directly superintend the production practices of each and every Central Coast farm. Central Coast farmers claim these new rules are so onerous they will destroy agriculture. And so today we pause to ask, can agriculture survive clean water? Here to help us cultivate an answer, we have a farmer and an environmentalist to boot, by golly. And we're going to start with the environmentalist because her name comes first on the alphabet, Jennifer Clary. Welcome aboard, Jennifer.
Thank you.
You're with Clean Water Action?
Yeah.
Is it fair to call you an environmentalist? Is that okay?
I'd be proud to be called an environmentalist. Thank you.
Okay, fair enough. Good enough. So what is Clean Water Action?
Clean Water Action is a national organization that works to protect and restore water quality. Mm-hmm. In California, we focus a lot on drinking water, particularly in one of my areas of concern is groundwater.
Mm-hmm. Drinking water, groundwater, and all water. So we always ask who pays the way. So where does Clean Water Action get its funding?
Clean Water Action is a member-funded organization. We have about 85,000 members in California.
That's a lot of members.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Okay. Also with us today, we have, I'm going to put this button on hold. There we go. We also have Dick Pichot, who is the farmer with Lakeside Organic Gardens based in Watsonville, California. Dick, welcome to the food chain.
Good morning.
Pleasure to have you aboard. Dick, you grow a lot of food for a lot of people. Tell us a little bit about Lakeside Organic Gardens.
We're based in Watsonville, California. We grow about 1,200 acres of certified organic acres in Watsonville area. And we do about 100 acres in Oxnard, California, and about 500 acres in the Imperial Valley. In the Holtville, El Centro area in the wintertime. So the year-round production, and we ship all over the country and into Canada. Been in business organic. We've been in business for about 15 years. And before that, we were conventional growers for about 20 years before that.
And what kind of crops do you grow, Dick?
We grow about 45 different crops, just about everything can be grown in this area. No fruit. It's all vegetables.
All vegetables.
Yeah.
How do you keep track of 45 different growing things all over on 1,800 acres?
We have we lay out schedules at the beginning of the year and say, you know, based off of what our customers want, and we follow those schedules according to planting pretty much every day, every different commodity almost every day, just to keep a steady supply, and then we just track those and, you know, walk the fields every day and see what the crops need and grow them to the best of our ability.
Are you what they call in the industry a grower shipper?
I would be classified as a grower shipper, yes.
Which is to say you grow it and you package it under your own name and you ship it.
Right, but a lot of grower shippers sell for other people. We just sell our own product, so we grow and ship our own product only.
Well, I guess we don't have to ask you who pays the way then.
Oh, that's pretty easy, yeah. I think I guess the public pays the way in supporting the organic movement there.
Mm-hmm. So they buy your food, and there you go.
Yeah.
So let's start with this whole notion that whether there is a problem with our surface water and our groundwater or not. And Jennifer, I guess we'll start with you. Is there a problem?
Yes, there's a significant problem. And the Water Board has laid it out pretty well that the majority of the surface waters on the Central Coast have been impacted by agricultural operations, pesticides, nutrients, sediments. And groundwater is also very serious. Between 1994 and 2000, the Department of Water Resources collected data showing that 17% of the wells in the Central Coast have at least one constituent above drinking water standards. Nitrate is the most serious. And in the Salinas Valley, some parts of the Salinas Valley, up to 20% of the wells exceed the nitrate standard. And nitrate, you should understand, is an acute contaminant. So once you exceed the drinking water standard, that well can't be used, and people have to look for alternative water supplies.
Okay, Dick, how does agriculture respond to the notion that there is a big problem with their water?
Oh, I believe I believe there is a problem. It's just a matter of how bad the problem is and what the contributors are. The finger gets pointed 100% at agriculture, and, you know, there's other contributors. Septic systems contribute into it, and there's a lot of there's actually naturally occurring nitrates that leach into the fields, leach through the fields too. So I think there's several contributors that, and it goes back over decades of other people farming on land and different mm-hmm. things in the past.
So it's when it gets right down to it, how does one point fingers, Jennifer? Is there a way of proving conclusively that agriculture is responsible for the contamination?
Sometimes there is and sometimes there isn't. Different sources of nitrates can leave different fingerprints, so to speak. But really, it's a matter of volume. So if you look at septic systems and the amount of nitrate they contribute, it's significant in very localized places where septic systems are located. And it's in septic systems that are either poorly constructed or not maintained. Farms, though, when you have an area that's dependent on agriculture, a farm will be applying hundreds of pounds of fertilizer per acre. So just if you just look at it as strictly a math equation, the amount of nitrogen applied for agriculture far exceeds that from natural sources.
Well, Dick, the Salinas and Pajaro Valleys of California are among the most fecund places on Earth. There are very few places that can produce more food than the Salinas and Pajaro Valley. So we do farm very intensively here. That does make it easier to point fingers at agriculture, does it not?
Of course, yeah. And I think that... you know, and there's a reason why it's farmed so intensively, and it's. And I said that, you know, I've had this debate with the city before with, you know, urban sprawl going on to ag ground. I said, if you take an acre of ag ground in the Pajaro Valley out of production today, there's no place in the world that you could go get another acre to replace it. It doesn't really exist to duplicate the soil, the water, the environment that we're growing in, the climate. It just you can't match it anywhere in the world, and you won't duplicate it.
So here we have the best land for growing things, and grow things we do. So, and we grow very intensively, and we use a lot of of supplemental nutrients and whatnot. So it goes into the water. But is there a problem, though? I have an occasion to spend quite a bit of time out on the Monterey Bay, and it's filled with life. On the way out, you see sea otters everywhere. You see seals. You see lots and lots of happy animals everywhere. So what are there any manifestations of trouble with our water runoff, Jennifer?
Well, yeah, you have dead zones in the local creeks and waterways, and that leads that means you have fewer fish spawning upstream. As I told you, I'm more of an expert on drinking water.
Okay.
But if you have excess nutrients, that leaves you kill the life in the streams, and with the food supply.
Okay, we're going to pick that up when we get back from the break, folks. This is the Food Chain, Michael Olson. This is today we're talking about water quality, and can agriculture survive clean water? Interesting question. We'll be back with answers with Dick Pichot, Lakeside Organic Gardens, Jennifer Clary, Clean Water Action, and you right back. Do stay tuned.
Get this. The average acre of farmland in or near the city limits may earn in excess of $123,000 per year. To learn how so much can be earned from so little, pick up a copy of MetroFarm, the guide to growing for big profit on a small parcel of land. MetroFarm is the PMA Ben Franklin Book of the Year Award winner by Michael Olson that contains over 500 pages of photos, charts, checklists, illustrations, and in-depth interviews. MetroFarm will teach you how to develop a strategy, survey markets, select crops, organize business, establish production, prepare for market, and make the sale. MetroFarm will teach you how others just like you earn a good living by growing high-value specialty crops for people who are truly appreciative. Abraham Lincoln said, "The greatest fine art of the future will be the making of a comfortable living from a small parcel of land." Get in on that future today. Pick up a copy of MetroFarm at bookstores, lawn and garden supply stores, 1-800-624-BOOK, or at www.metrofarm.com.
Welcome back, folks. We're talking water today on the Food Chain with Jennifer Clary of the Clean Water Action and also Dick Pichot, who is the owner of Lakeside Organic Gardens. Dick is a farmer with 1,800 acres growing organic food for people all over the United States. Dick, do you ship offshore as well?
No. Everything is continental United States and Canada.
Okay. As an organic farmer, you still have to use supplement with nutrients. You still have to put things into the ground that get picked up by the water, and some of that water runs off your property. Do you see dead zones downstream from your farm?
I've never seen them, no. I've asked to see them, but I've never really seen them. And then there's kind of a fallacy that, organic farmers don't use nitrogen, and it's the most necessary component in our farming system to grow the crops. I mean, it's like the lifeblood of the crop. So
sure.
It's one of our biggest chores.
It's what puts the green in the green, right?
Absolutely.
So if we want food, we have to put nitrogen in the ground. Otherwise, we quickly burn up that nitrogen and the plants quit growing. Jennifer, where do we see problems? You're a groundwater expert. What are the manifestations of these too much nitrates in the environment, if you will?
Well, there are certain hydrologically vulnerable areas, and the Southern Salinas Valley in particular is one of them. And in those cases, excess fertilizer application, and we all agree that fertilizer is essential. It's when you put on more than the crop needs that it then then it goes down into the groundwater aquifer. If it's above a certain amount, 45 parts per million, then the water is no longer safe to drink.
Mm-hmm. And Dick, as a farmer and a business person, I would suspect you're pretty careful about not putting too much of anything on the fields.
Absolutely. I mean, nitrogen is a very expensive input, so it's our job to keep it to a minimum, for financial reasons. And then, definitely when we over-fertilize and leach it, that's the last thing we want to do, because that's just basically washing your money away.
And nobody wants to wash money away.
Mm-hmm.
Jennifer, we have a magnificent algae bloom in the Gulf of Mexico, right at the mouth of the Mississippi River. Do we have anything like that in California?
I don't think we have anything to that extent, no.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not aware of that. I mean, I just want to point out something, and that is that Dick is an organic farmer, and I believe, and maybe you can correct me, that to be a certified organic farmer, you have to have a nutrient management plan, do you not?
Yeah. Vaguely, yeah, it's a vague plan, but it's in general, yes.
But I would suspect, this is what I was trying to get at before, you know, as a business person, you don't want to put too much inputs that aren't needed. You know, if you only need X amount of nitrogen on your field, and that nitrogen is very expensive material, you certainly wouldn't want to use any excess. You certainly don't want to see your money literally being washed down the drain and off your farm and down the river.
On the other hand, if you put on that exact amount of nitrate that maximizes your yield is kind of an elusive number. And so you put it, so my understanding is that many farmers, and I have no, and I'm not saying every farmer, but I understand that many farmers put on a little bit more than is required by the crop to ensure that that yield is maximized.
Dick?
Well, let me explain this something a little bit. I've been, you know, walking my own fields for 36 years, and, you know, you have to look at the plant to understand it. You can take all the tests you want. I'm looking at the regulations right now. It says, now, keep in mind we have 45 different crops, and we have multiple plantings, so at any given point we have around 400 to 500 fields, separate fields out there to manage. So according to this, and let me just read this really quick, it says we must take a nitrogen soil sample prior to planting, must take a leaf sample prior to applying nitrogen, and then we must determine the typical crop uptake for each crop type and report and basis of determination, and then we must develop a certified irrigation plan.
Wow.
Now that's for each crop, each planting, every day. And the thing is, we do that. We do that, but what we do is we look at the plant, and we have to look and analyze the plant. Right now, with the cold climate that we've had, the nitrogen uptake is not what this book would say we should put on. It's what the plant requires, and we need to put on enough nitrogen to grow the crop. This would be a pure disaster for us to follow this little set of plans that somebody's worked up in a class somewhere.
So this is the new rules that are being talked about with respect to the Central Coast Water Quality Management Board. This is what they're telling you have to take a nitrogen sample of the soil for each time you plant a crop, and
yep.
for each...
Which we do. We do that. So we take soil samples every year for all of our ground to analyze all the content of the different minerals.
Mm-hmm. So only nitrogen, but also phosphorus, potassium, and
right.
the secondary stuff as well.
Right. But then they're saying we have to take leaf samples, and we have to justify how much nitrogen we're going to put on. But is that based off of 80-degree temperatures from today or 50-degree temperatures of 2 weeks ago? Because nobody has, they can't plug that into the equation.
Well, let's take some phone calls from people if you're up for it. So we're going to go to Tom. Tom, welcome to the Food Chain Radio program.
Yeah, I just wanted to say on this whole water thing that, well, first of all, you know, I'm a farmer as well, which makes me an environmentalist. I'm not going to give that term up to anybody. But this, and we've got some real serious problems here in the groundwater, in the surface water, due to, you know, applications of nitrogen, pesticides, whatever, over the years here in agriculture, and I don't think anybody's going to deny that. But this regulatory scheme that the water board has cooked up would absolutely destroy the economic engine that would develop the funding to fix the problems that exist. It's going to cost money to fix these problems, and this regulation would destroy our ability to farm economically. And
why is that?
Well, because of the type of restrictions that Dick has mentioned, and the standards that you have to meet to within the time frames that are being developed here. So they're saying they want, you know, drinking water quality on surface water, you know, within, you know, 2 or 3 years or whatever it is. These types of arbitrary measurements that are impossible to meet. Nobody can meet them, and they probably didn't exist before we farmed anyway. And
I would think so too. I'd be afraid to drink out of any ditch.
And it's very arbitrary. The water board is unelected. It's appointed. There's no accountability to the local people. But there's also one other fact we got to keep in mind here, and that is you will never hear the water board or certain people who are involved in this. They will never talk about cost benefit. Yeah, we've got problems here, but there's no place in the world that has a more concentrated production of high quality fruits and vegetables than you got right here in this valley. And that in and of itself, if we destroy our competitiveness and our ability to continue that, people aren't going to quit eating. They'll disperse this industry out into places that aren't regulated. And the quality of food may degrade. The regulation of the production system will degrade, especially if it goes outside of California. And what have we gained? What have we solved? We've just moved the problem. And this is what people have to realize. You've got to work with the industry to solve these problems, but chasing the industry away or degrading its ability to compete is going to ruin our chance to fix it.
And there you go.
All right.
Well, thank you for that comment. We're going to have Jennifer respond to that when we come back from this break. Folks, this is the Food Chain. Michael Olson here. We're talking about water quality. This is something that is happening in California right now. We're a government agency, a non-elected government agency, an appointed government agency, is going to dictate the terms for water quality and then superintend all of the farmers under its jurisdiction. This is happening in California today, and if it goes through, I guess it could happen just about anywhere, because just about anywhere has bad water. So this is the subject of the day. Can agriculture survive clean water? 800-624-2665, 831-4790, right back. Welcome back. Michael Olson here. This is the Food Chain Radio Program. We're talking about water quality with Dick Pichot, who is the farmer for Lakeside Organic Gardens, and also Jennifer Cleary, Program Associate for Clean Water Action. Can agriculture survive clean water? Jennifer, like Tom was suggesting, the government is going to establish rules to superintend farmers. How is this going to work?
Well, I'm not staff of the water board, so if you want to understand how it's going to work, you probably should have someone from that body on. I just want to state that the Porter Cologne Water Quality Act, under which these rules are being developed, requires cost-benefit analysis. So that has to be done for any regulation that impacts agriculture. Mm-hmm. I would also say that currently the people who bear the cost are not necessarily the farmers. They're the people who don't have clean drinking water. So if you look at a place like San Gerardo, a small community in southern Salinas Valley, they didn't have clean water because of nitrates and DBCP for at least 10 years. And they now have clean drinking water, but it's costing them $112 a month. Mm-hmm. If you have nitrates in your water and don't have an alternative drinking water supply, you have to go out and find your alternative water supply. And that's usually at a significantly higher cost than tap water.
Fair enough.
So, and just another difficulty is that, for instance, in Monterey County, 1 in 6 residents is dependent on a domestic well for their drinking water supply. Those tend to be shallower than public water supply wells. And they also aren't regulated. They're not tested. There's no testing requirement. And we have no idea how those people are impacted.
They might turn green on us, right?
Well, there's a lot of different health impacts, blue baby syndrome,
right,
thyroid problems, cancer. So just to say that there's a cost. There's a cost to dirty water and there's a cost to clean water. And who bears it is a matter that we really should have a more open discussion about. So if we're going to continue to have water that exceeds drinking water standards or surface water standards for beneficial uses, who pays to clean that up, or who pays for alternatives?
Who pays the true cost, right?
Exactly.
Dick Pichot, let me ask you, I'm sure you know what kind of rules are being established by this government agency that's going to superintend the water of the Central Coast. What is it that they want to do?
I've said it before, and I'll say it again. I've been quoted before. I said, in 36 years of farming, it is by far the most bizarre set of rules that I've ever seen on paper anywhere. I mean, I consider this, these regulations are, it's really like Tom said, the regional board reports to no one. They report to no one in this area. They're appointed by the governor, and then they're on their own to set up these deals, and we have to live with them. So, I mean, this is it's the political systemic annihilation of agriculture as we know it in the Central Coast, and it would be the most restrictive regulations in the whole United States.
Let me ask right you, as a farmer, can you comply?
Impossible. It will basically put us out of business. It is impossible to comply to these rules the way they're written. So, impossible.
So if they're impossible to comply, would they be possible for anybody to comply with them? Or is it just impossible for Lakeside Organic Gardens?
I think it would be impossible for anybody to financially survive them. You know, the amount of, I mean, we have to get, you know, scientists to go out, and we can no longer grow our crops. We have to rely on the government to tell us how much of the lifeblood we can supply our crops. The government will basically tell us if we need more nitrogen in our radishes, and if they say no, our radishes will die. If they say, well, you know, it's been cold, it's really not our problem, we follow the rule book. And let me tell you from experience, the rule book can't grow the crops. You need somebody walking the field that can actually look at the crop and determine if it needs more nitrogen or not. And you can look at all the books you want, but it won't do that for you.
So if you cannot comply with the rules and nobody else can comply with rules, then would it be fair to state that only those farmers who are favored by the government agency will be able to grow crops? I mean, what I'm sensing here is a situation where to grow crops, you're going to have to somehow buy your way by the government.
Well, I think Tom brings up a great point as far as I think what you need to look at is, in order to solve any problem, you know, you need to survive. Now, that was said in some of these meetings before when they said, well, this will annihilate agriculture. And one of the guys said, well, maybe that's the answer to the problem. And I said, well, for you it would be, but, you know, unfortunately, you know, you're employed by a government agency, so you'll have a job. But I have several hundred farm workers that depend on us for a living, and there's hundreds of thousands that depend on agriculture for a living, and right down through the whole chain, through the whole city of Salinas and everything else. And so if you really don't care about those jobs, then you can get rid of agriculture and the problem be solved. And if they got rid of the city of Salinas right in the middle of there, we solve a lot of other problems too. But unfortunately, we need to keep everybody alive so that we can survive to solve the problem over a period of time. This wasn't created overnight. It's going to take time to solve. And so we're all working toward it. I mean, I personally reduced my nitrogen use by 35% over the last 10 years, and a lot of other people have done now. I mean, we're learning to grow crops today we can grow certain crops without any nitrogen at all, but we didn't learn that overnight. It's been gathering information and learning what we can get away with. You know, a lot of crops, we reduced over 50% of our nitrogen, and that's not just because I'm an organic grower. That's because right now, nitrogen is one of the most expensive inputs, and so every grower is trying to learn how to cut back on their nitrogen and learning that, hey, we put on too much in the past, and we're willing to work to try to solve that. You know, but to have regulations like this on our backs will just drag us right into the ground.
Okay, let's go to the phones. We're going to work the phones here a little bit. I'm going to go to Jack, who has a comment about nitrates in the water and in the ground. Jack, welcome to the food chain. Go ahead.
Yes, good morning, Michael, and good morning, Dick. My apologies. One thing that as our business, Soils to Grow, has had in the years that we've been on the peninsula is we've done a lot of soil fertility work for homeowners, and we find that the average homeowner uses tons and tons of nitrogen, way too much. It gets spread on the sidewalk. It gets, you know, they want to have a green lawn regardless of anything else, and they run a lot of water, and it floods into the groundwater and into the ocean. So I think there were studies that were done that showed that a large percentage of the nitrate pollution was not coming from the farmers.
Jack, that's an interesting comment, because a couple of weeks ago we did a program about using poison to kill rats and other rodents. And the people made the comment, well, agriculture is really easy to control because we can see them, we know exactly what they're doing. The real problem with rat poison is homeowners, and the homeowners used so much more rat poison than they need to, and that rat poison kills the rats, and then all of the predators of rats eat the poison and die, and thus we have this problem that's really precipitated by homeowners and not agriculture. Jennifer, you have a comment on that?
Yeah, well, in cities have to have discharge permits as well. So they have non-point source permits. So as those problems are found, and there is definitely a problem, I know in the Bay Area there's...
Right, can you hold that up? We're going to pick it up when we come back from the break. Folks, 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. This is The Food Chain, right back. Well, big question today. Can agriculture and clean water coexist? Can we have both? And if we can't have both, what are we going to do? Where are we going to get our food? If we're going to clean our water up to the extent that it's drinking water quality, that means essentially, Dick Pichot of Lakeside Organic Garden says, is that agriculture can't survive. Well, okay, so where are we going to get our food? If we can't get it from here, one of the most productive agricultural districts in the world, where is it going to be grown? Dick, where are we going to grow our food?
Well, I think it's moving to other areas, moving into Mexico, into China. It's happening as we speak. It's just how many more nails do we want to put in the coffin? You know, we're under air pollution deals that we live with every day. You know, we're under, you know, pesticide regulations. Even organic farmers have pesticide regulations that we live under every day. And it's just how many more nails you want to put in the coffin. And every day I have to compete, with product from Mexico coming in every day. They don't live up to these standards, and they don't have to. So if people are happy getting all their produce from Mexico, well, maybe then we should just step aside and allow them to get all their product from. But I think it's a pretty dangerous territory when you sign off all your food to let somebody else control your food, and I don't think that's where most people want to go.
Well, Jennifer, what do you think? I mean, if we can't grow food here and we have to grow it someplace else, that where it's dirty, are we really solving the problem?
Well, I don't think that's really the question. I think that everyone supports continued agriculture and continued agriculture domestically, and California is an exporter of agricultural products.
Yes, but if we can't grow food here and we're not going to be exporting
I think this is difficult because this is an area. Agriculture is the last industry or land use entity to be regulated for water quality, but everyone else operates under water quality permits and regulations. And what we have to do is figure out what we can do and what makes sense and how we prioritize or target the most serious threats. So, yeah.
Okay, let's go to the phone calls here, and I'm going to put Dick on hold. Go ahead, Rory.
Thanks for taking my call, Michael.
Go ahead.
Can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Yeah. The main point is I want to agree with Tom, and I think Dick mentioned it, is we can't uncouple the economic engine that is driving our local economy and keeping food production local. And we've got to work through these issues. I don't think everybody has all the answers. I know for a fact that there are some wells that they're not even on the flat. They're up in the hilly area, and it's been pasture land forever. And some of those are naturally high in nitrates, you know, up over 20 parts per million.
Mm-hmm.
I know that there's a lot of good wells, deep wells that are low. So we just got to keep moving forward, but we can't regulate business.
Let me ask you this. You're a farmer. Can you survive these rules? Can you farm under these conditions where the water that runs off your farm has to be drinking quality?
No. First of all, I'm a consultant, Michael. I'm not directly farming as Dick is. But
can the farmers you consult?
You know, the way the regulations read, as I've read them, it's not it's not possible. And I don't know, maybe Jennifer knows, they were trying to set the limit for nitrate, and I heard that they were going to go as low as 0.9 parts per million as being acceptable, when, you know, naturally some lakes in the Sierras are, you know, 2 to 3 parts per million nitrate. So it's, they're trying to shove these regulations on us. They don't have any feelings as an agency and bureaucrats. Just to give you an idea of the scale, the Department of Pesticide Regulation, or DPR, has a $72-73 million a year budget. The California Water Quality Board, the State Water Quality Board, is over $600 million. It's a huge agency. And I know for a fact, I spoke with a fellow that worked for the container nursery business, and he was told by a bureaucrat from the State Water Quality Board, when he told this bureaucrat that, hey, these regulations that you're proposing is going to put ag out of business in the state. And the bureaucrat told him, I don't care. He just flat out told him, I don't care if it puts that ag out of business. So we got to get accountability to this board. They can't just be running willy-nilly based on, you know, appointed positions and just running roughshod. In fact, you know, ag is willing to work with them, but they have to be reasonable. And if they fight us, we're not going to come to conclusions. Lawsuits will start, and it'll just drag this thing on ad infinitum. And I know the UC researchers that work very closely on this issue, that work even with the dairy business in the Central Valley, they understand this dynamic. You have to get industry working with the regulations so there could be a good conclusion and outcome for everybody. The last thing I'll say, Michael, is that every crop is different. Every variety is different. The varieties I work with in the strawberries, you know, we can grow them on a low nitrogen regimen. It's different than other varieties. We know what our plants need, and we don't put on any more than they need. If anything, we run them lean. We use controlled release fertilizers, very safe to use. So I think that the dynamic, the technology is there. Just as in with pesticide, there's softer materials. You know, we've moved away from the real harsh chemicals, the old chemistries.
Rory, we're up against a break here. Let me ask
you. All right,
you,
no problem.
Let me ask
you
just a second. Yeah. Let me ask you, can agriculture survive this clean water stuff?
Well, yeah, if they work with us, if they come down with the...
What if you have to work with them?
Oh, yeah. I can work with them, but they have to be reasonable. They can't come in with this one-size-fits-all. You know, you know, Michael, they're telling you that you're responsible for all the runoff off your property. Well, you have to be out there when the runoff is happening.
Okay, can you do that? Can you do that?
No.
All right, thank you very much, Rory. Got to take a quick break, folks. This is The Food Chain. Michael Olson, right back with Dick Bachote and Jennifer Clary and you. Do stay tuned. Well, folks, the question on the table today is, can we have agriculture and clean water in the same place? We're talking specifically today about the Pajaro and Salinas Valleys in California, some of the most productive farmland in the country. We farm it intensively because it produces so incredibly. And in that production, we use a supplement with nutrients, and that some of those nutrients run off and go out into the environment and cause trouble. So can we clean up agriculture and still have it? Or are we going to be looking at a situation where government is going to come in and take control of agriculture and become so dictatorial that only those farmers that it favors will be allowed to break enough rules to be able to grow the crops? Jennifer Clary, Clean Water Action, can we have both? Well, let's see. I better press the button here. Let's try that. Go ahead.
I think we certainly can. I think it's very difficult now because you're going from nothing to something. But think about something as basic as reporting your fertilizer use. Farmers are required to report their pesticide use, but not their fertilizer use. If farmers had to report their fertilizer application, the water board could pinpoint farms that use a lot of fertilizer and maybe pay more attention to them and double check and monitor what they're doing. And the second thing is, we don't monitor what's coming off individual farms, so we actually don't know which farms are causing the greatest problems. So maybe it's a matter of taking some measurements and finding out and being able to pinpoint more precisely where our problems are.
Well, Dick Bichot, what do you think? What's wrong with some reasonable rules?
Let's see. Reasonable rules I have no problem with, and I think most farmers don't. When she talks about, you know, simple things about reporting, you know, nitrogen use and things, but that's not what they're talking about. I mean, they're talking about us being out there when it's pouring rain, trying to figure out what's running off of our property. I mean, I'm looking at a sheet here with 52 different things on it, and some of them are, even one of them, the other day I had a bunch of my friends there in the farming business, and they were just set back in their seat by one regulation, only one. But, I mean, it's, you know, the one regulation's got at least 30 or 40 different things within that one regulation. And it's just unbelievable, you know, what the extent that what they've taken. And like going back to what Tom and Rory said, and I've said it before, is the best way is to keep us in business and to start working towards solutions. You know, I've had this before with water supply situations and pollution and everything. They want to take everything right today. We want to solve a problem that's been occurring for 50 years.
I never thought I'd find myself asking this question, Dick Bichot of Lakeside Organic Gardens, but do you think they're trying to get rid of agriculture in California?
I don't think it's that. I think they don't have an understanding. You know, like the Farm Bureau has a deal like the, you know, Focus Ag, which educates people, and I've taken many, many politicians through that class and have spent a day on the farm to try to learn about it, and we've come away with open eyes, and I participate in it every year because it's really an eye-opening experience once they've actually been out on the farm and seen that we're not reckless. You know, we're careful about what we do, and we take a lot of care to put the right amount of fertilizer down, and, you know, we don't want to waste money.
What happens if you put too much nitrogen on the plants?
Well, you can actually burn the plants if you put too much.
There you go.
And you're definitely wasting a lot of money.
Well, apologies to all of you who are hanging on the phones trying to get in today. We're just not going to make it, ran out of time. But you can always participate by going to the forums at metrofarm.com and log on your comments and what you think. Can we have agriculture and clean water? Or do we have to have one or the other? And what happens then? Thanks, Dick. Thanks, Jennifer. And thank you all.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.